This is a previously recorded episode. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Coming to you from the Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming, it's The Undercard. Bringing you the best in hand combat coverage with feature interviews, major events, and the hottest ring girls from around the nation. The Undercard is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. And now, here they are, always in your corner, Brad, Marv, and Jimmy.
Welcome to The Undercard. It's officially episode 191. Welcome back. If you're new to the show, we talk boxing, MMA, pop culture, and make it kind of mix. So I got to start off on a note, though. So, I don't know. I leave the house at 6 in the morning. And then I go to, you know, work, I guess, if you'd like to say that. And
what else would you call it?
What else are you doing at 6 in the morning?
I enjoy everything I do, so I don't consider this work. Okay, well, I don't consider
Do you get paid for it?
Yeah.
Then it's work. No, but that's the thing, though. The old saying is, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Right. So anyways,
I don't know.
So anyways, someone decided to contact me at 11:30.
In the a.m.
Okay. Correct. Okay. But by then, my day's already gone. Okay. That's what I went to college for. So I don't start working at 11.
Work for the day.
Right. So I went to college so I didn't have to start working at 11. And this person decides out of nowhere to message me and then say, I need something done immediately.
Okay.
Which just threw me off for the whole fucking day. So I was just pissy all day. Just pissy.
He's still pissy.
I'm still fucking pissy, dude.
Okay.
About
I'm not understanding. So
somebody instead of telling you the day before they needed something, decided to tell you midday that they needed fucking something.
That's like every job, everywhere.
That's every day for me.
This has nothing to do with anything like that.
I was just saying that's every job everywhere.
That's every day for me.
I'm just shitting on inconsiderate people. Gotcha. That's what I'm doing, okay?
Like my day job, like everybody else's emergency becomes my emergency.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't plan ahead, so now my day is screwed. Yeah,
but it had nothing to do with, like, the job at hand.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I deal with all day long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You give reasonable answers back that you were like, hey, this is the reasonable answers I can give you back. And those don't suffice. But, you know, that's that generation.
Yeah, well.
Anyways, let's start the show. Sorry, I was on a little soapbox there. I could probably go 2 hours about it. Yeah. But, you know.
Oh, God, please.
But apparently gorillas were shot and lots has happened since the last week freaking The Undercard. So we're waiting for Marcus, who is the heavyweight champion, to heavyweight national champion from the Golden Gloves National Tournament. He's supposed to be coming in. I'm a little concerned, though, because I told him 6:30. Yeah. It's 7 o'clock.
It sure is. It's 7:07.
Exactly.
Just saying.
He was excited, though. He said, should I bring my belt? And I was like, you absolutely should bring your belt. He was like, where is the place? So these are things that typically when a guest says.
You didn't give him directions to the old place, did you?
No.
All right, just making sure. He's knocking on the door over in Ferndale like, somebody let me in.
No. And he has my number, and I just text, is he on his way? But we will give him a proper welcome if he responds back to me. And then Ed Thoroughbred Williams will be at the 8 o'clock hour. He just landed a fight in Vegas. If you've been in the Detroit area, he's fought on a lot of Detroit cards. Once again, this show is sponsored by happening June 10th at the Motor City Casino. It is a night of knockouts again. Carlos is throwing a show. I'll be writing for Fight News that night. It's going to be an awesome night. The Ring Girls will be working, so come out and say hi to us. I've been told there is less than 200 tickets available for this. No surprise, because Anthony Barnes sells a lot of tickets on the show. So we'll be talking to a couple people next week that I wanted to give heads up to. First off, Amanda Bobby Cooper. Thank you to the UFC for allowing us permission to talk to her next week.
Yep.
Thank you, UFC, for being wise enough not allowing us to talk to her this week, because I don't want her to pay a fine. I don't want to pay a fine.
Right.
I don't want to mess up. So thank you, UFC. She'll be on next week, Amanda Bobby Cooper. Of course, though, she is fighting tomorrow night on the Ultimate Fighter Show.
Mm-hmm.
Must win, stay in the house, all that situation. Yep. And so we will be talking about that with her next week. But let's start off with a little bit of just general culture, and then hopefully Marcus comes in. We will be talking Conor Mayweather. How can you not? We're going to be talking Triple G
he
versus
can't
Canelo.
See you, Rochelle. That
how no. can you not? What? Oh, somebody called.
You need to give it to me.
You need
oh.
to give
jeez. Man. Well,
she's been sitting here for the last 5 minutes trying to get your attention.
I'll tell you what.
That would have worked last week. Yeah,
I know.
In that seat last week.
I know,
if I had a nickel for every time I've heard Rochelle say that. You need to give it to me.
Let's start off with the first subject, though.
You'd have 0 cents.
I know. I would owe her $7, actually. Because I'm always saying it to her. You need to give it to me. And she's like, yeah.
No.
Let's start off with the first subject, though. I wanted to talk a couple of things. First off, this gorilla story with the four-year-old boy who falls into the moat in Cincinnati Zoo.
Mm-hmm. Stupid kid.
Stupid parents or stupid kid?
Just kidding.
Okay.
Both.
Well, I don't know anymore. That sounds like something Marv would say.
What's that? Stupid parent?
If you don't know the story, you got to be living under a rock. How do you not know this story?
It's all over.
It's everywhere.
Social media, the news.
Okay, so we're going to fill in everybody apparently. So a four-year-old kid somehow passed three barricades, we now learn, to fall into a moat where a gorilla was there. It appears that the gorilla stands the kid up in the water.
Hold on. It's very important that you say that it was a 700-pound silverback gorilla. Not just a normal gorilla. These are the alpha males of the gorilla, you know, grouping or whatever. And it's 700 pounds. The fact if he just grabbed the child and yanked a little bit, I mean, you're talking like dislocated shoulder. You're talking major, major damage.
Can I just say that it would have been my son who had went in there? Can you see Elijah just like, hey, what's going on in there?
Yeah, clarify why. Not that you were a distracted parent or a bad parent. He was just curious and he went on his own.
Yeah, very curious child at 4 years old.
So we got to explain the story because Liz doesn't even know the story. So past three barricades.
I've seen the video, though. I think I seen it yesterday if it was on Facebook.
Oh, yes, it was.
Okay.
So then the gorilla appears to sit up the boy, but then starts to get agitated because people are yelling, trying to tell the boy it's okay. Drags the boy away, and then 10 minutes later that you hear a shot and the gorilla took it from a sharpshooter that took out the gorilla. First off, I got to say, when it comes to animal crises, Jack Hanna is my professional go-to. And Jack Hanna says that they absolutely did the right thing.
Why couldn't they trank it?
Because they say that it might have agitated them more.
And also, tranquilizers don't happen right away.
So it'd take like 10 minutes.
How do they know that the gorilla wasn't protecting the baby?
I think he was.
I think he was, too.
All right.
From Wells Fargo.
Let me know my checking account balance.
That's you, Jimmy.
Yeah, Wells Fargo, you owe us $250.
Jimmy's over here trying to refinance his car.
No. I'm trying to read the story. So you know how when you go onto a website and they have those little pop-up things or whatever? So I went on the website to try to read the story about the gorilla, and all right, hold on. I'm turning my audio down.
This is Internet 101 for anybody that's curious.
But anyway, so it popped up the thing. Anyway. But so I've been following this closely because I had the same questions. Why didn't they trach them? Maybe the gorilla was protecting the boy.
I thought you were going to say that you've had that same experience.
No.
Jim's like, I once crawled into a gorilla enclosure.
Trying to protect the boy or whatever. But here's the thing. Every single expert in the field, people that have worked with the gorillas, people that know the gorillas, that train the gorillas, that you know are zookeepers and all like that, every single one of them said that the gorilla was posturing, he was getting in an offensive stance, and he would have hurt the boy. It was not a, will he hurt the boy? It was, he was getting ready to hurt the boy.
Those people don't know what the hell they're talking about.
I'm saying, and these are coming from the actual experts from other zoos, zookeepers.
But was he posturing to the child or posturing to the person with the gun and the people yelling at him?
I don't think he saw the people with the gun.
Well, either way, I'm just saying, like, who was he posturing for?
He was getting agitated, and when they're saying because of, like, the pursing of the lips, the baring of the teeth or whatever, that he would not even necessarily intentionally harm the boy, but because of his agitated state, he would have grabbed the boy And because what they do when they get in an agitated state is they grab something that's near them and they start bashing it on the ground to try to make noise or try to do whatever. And that's what the gorilla probably would have ended up doing with the boy, is he would have started posturing, using the boy as kind of a almost like a thing to make noise or to.
Oh, it would have made noise, all right.
Well, you know what I'm saying? But so, yeah, every article that I've read where it's been zookeepers from other zoos have said that it was a tragedy, but they absolutely did the right thing. That there was no way – you could not train them. It would not happen fast enough.
We always go to Jack Hanna. That's our
And what did Jack Hanna say? He said they
did
the
right
thing.
Shot it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and, you know, does any blame go to the parents?
Absolutely.
Well, yes. So this is
to a degree. Yeah. To a degree, because, I mean, you have
half
kids.
Half and half,
so, well, no, you have kids, right? I mean, how many times have you turned and, like, looked at something and then looked back and your kid is gone?
Dude, okay, we just went to Put and Bay the other day. It was, like, every second.
Right? So, like, I mean, 10 years old, like, I mean, yes, I mean, you need to have control of your child, but, I mean, like, kids, they get away from you. Now,
I understand that but yeah. To be able to get through, as you're telling me, three barriers.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying the kid hasn't had his ass busted enough.
Well, I'm just saying.
Because I might have got away from my parents and made it through one barrier, but as soon as my dad said, get your ass over here, I would have turned around and I would have got back.
Right.
If you know that you're a child, and I'm sure by 4 years old, you've got a clue that your kid's a wanderer, you know, and you're taking him somewhere like that, you got a deadly animal in front of you. Heck yeah, I'm going to keep my eye on
right.
it.
Well, that's why they put...
That's when I get... I'm going to buy one of those leashes.
You have to have the leash.
Dude, well, yeah, the people that would rip on people with the leashes, now what are they saying? Because I always looked at, as a parent, the leashes were genius.
The child leash saved my brother-in-law when they were kids. They had those back in the 60s.
That's awesome.
And the younger brother-in-law pushed the older brother-in-law off a subway platform in New York. Whoa. Because, quote, he wanted to see what would happen. And luckily, my father-in-law had the leash on him and, like, could pull the kid back up. But, like, had they not had them, like, my man would have been down on the – like, and the train was coming. Like, my brother-in-law was like, yeah, I want to see what happened. I push in front of the train. Like, holy
– So wow. I guess the question for debate is, who's more at fault, the zoo or the parents? Because obviously the zoo's three barricades still aren't good enough if a four-year-old can get through.
So the zoo is responsible for the barricades, but – the parents are also being investigated by the police. It's actually a dual investigation. They're investigating the safety procedures around the gorilla enclosure or whatever, and they're also going to investigate if there was any negligence on the part of the parents.
I think this is going to bring up.
I don't think there was any question that there's negligence on the part of the
well,
parents.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But that's what the investigation is.
Like, here's where the investigation
right
should end. Yeah. Did your child get away from you and get into a gorilla enclosure? Yes, negligent.
I watched a documentary on the two elephants that were from, like, the Detroit Zoo that they sent to that elephant sanctuary.
Yeah.
And the abuse that elephants go through when they're at a zoo setting, when they don't have the ability to walk around and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to bring up the whether zoos are just for our general fascination or are actually animal cruelty, because some of these animals – you know, just aren't living quality lives in there. So I imagine that debate's going to come up. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things though, with society we live in right now, where until something else happens, we'll forget about this anyways. But it's going to be interesting to see, because I think the zoo probably has a little bit of the blame, and I think the parents have a little bit.
Well, think about it when it happened in SeaWorld with the orcas and how they went after the trainers. Same sort of deal. Like, they're bred in captivity.
They're not even allowed in the waters with the orcas anymore because of the movie.
Right, but they were bred in captivity.
One of my favorite
movies.
Right.
And, I mean,
well, and here's, like, especially with zoos and especially, like, I'm sorry, but especially with, like, zoos and endangered species and stuff like that. Yes, zoos are, you could be considered borderline animal cruelty, but at the same time, zoos are also protecting a lot of endangered species that if they were out in the wild probably would have been hunted past extinction now.
Sure.
But because they are kept in captivities in the zoos that, you know, they've basically been able to save some of the species.
Certainly zoos – certainly zoos do – I mean, they don't afford a fantastic quality of life. But the worst culprit to me are circuses. I absolutely refuse to attend
any
circuses.
What was it?
Because they treat those animals
horrible. Yeah,
I don't even have an adequate vocabulary to describe how poorly
was it. Ringling Brothers or which one was the circus that just released all their elephants?
Wait, first off, we got to verify this isn't a conflict of interest for you because we're trying to get into clown college.
No, talk about what goes on in the circus.
He was not going to work at a circus. He was going to be in a white van with no windows.
Like you're not. Like, there's no, like, I can't speak about what goes on.
He may have had Uncle Jimmy's circus on the side of the van, but it was not what was going to be going on.
I had some cotton candy. He's like,
he would have been like, you want to buy a piece of candy, little boy?
I got a magic show for you. Poof! Exactly. My clothes are gone.
Oh, Jimmy, you nasty bastard.
No. What I was saying is there is a circus. I don't know if it was Barnum & Bailey or which circus it was.
I think
they just recently released all of their elephants so that they no longer have them anymore. I don't know if they went to a zoo or they got shipped over to an animal sanctuary.
I believe they went to an animal sanctuary.
Okay.
There's there's several around. There's one out in California that is on like acres and acres and acres of land.
That's the one I think.
Yeah, we watched the documentary.
Binky and the ones from the Detroit Zoo.
Okay, they roam around and like they
elephants are freaking cool. Elephants. They live forever.
Well, they live a long time. They're smart as all get out. They recognize and mourn their dead.
Yeah.
Like that, like what other animal does that besides us?
We do that, yeah.
But I mean, like they'll come across bones and be like they will recognize the bones. Like, oh, that's Uncle Harry.
That's Uncle Harry.
Right? Like, that's like that blows my mind.
Yeah.
And what do? We put them in cement enclosures.
I know this is a cop-out.
Down every couple of years.
But I'm going to go half and half. But if I had to pick one, I'd say the zoo's more at fault. Rochelle.
Okay.
We'll work away. You're the main event.
That's cool.
Like I said, I have a kid who's a wanderer, but
you'd think the zoo.
Well, not necessarily because there would be. Well, I don't know. I'd be like kicking myself in the face, but I mean, there were times when you really don't expect. Tell him to come in. You really don't expect to.
There's the guy that can't return texts.
Like he's all right.
Keep going.
What I'm saying is, like, there was a time when I literally just turned around and my son was like in a main road, but that was like he had went through my house, he had went through a huge cemetery, and then he was in the road.
Mm-hmm.
He was like three,
right?
But I mean, it's not like I was being negligent. At the same time, he goes.
Well, you're saying this is at your house, though, right?
Yes.
Weren't you a little bit more diligent and a little bit more aware of where he was if you were out in like public?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, in your house, that's one thing because it's your house and you feel safe there and you kind of let your guard down. But if you're at a place like a zoo or a mall or something like that, you don't let your child out of your sight.
I really don't see how any blame could be put, you know, a large amount of blame could be put on the zoo.
Okay.
I think it would be mostly the parents.
Okay. All right, Liz.
That's terrible, dude.
What?
He's sharing a meme that so.
Wait.
It's a gorilla. It's a gorilla on the other side of class.
Oh yeah, I've seen. I've
looking
seen
at
that.
A kid.
Yeah, yeah.
The gorilla's giving the kid the middle finger, and it says, "Get out of here before you get me shot."
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, that's so bad.
So, Liz, what do you think? Parents or zoo?
I think it's both, but I feel.
Gotta pick one.
You didn't.
I did.
I said the zoo. If I had to pick one,
the zoo should be childproof, if that's what you want to call it. I think that they should have had stuff to where, whether the kid did wander, that it wouldn't be able to go inside.
That freaking 4-year-old was MacGyver. Three barricades.
But I don't know. I kind of agree with Michelle, though. Like, it's like both, but I would say the zoo.
Mm. It's equal. It's 100% equal because it was a perfect storm of failures. It was a failure for the parents.
You
can
only prosecute one, though.
They're not because they're two separate investigations.
God, what a sharpshooter too. You figure the freaking kid's still around.
Well, okay, I don't want to take anything away from whoever the sharpshooter was, But like my base for like badass sharpshooters are the Navy SEALs that took out the pirates on the
yes, on the
sea. Cuz those dudes laid yeah. on an aircraft carrier for yeah. 2 days yep. going up and down, and the other boat is going yep. up and down until somebody said shoot them, and a second later those motherfuckers' heads exploded.
Yeah. That's awesome.
All right, yeah. That is a sharpshooter.
You figure these aren't the same sharpshooters. These are guys.
No. I'm just saying, I don't want to take anything away from them, but like compared to that guy,
you can still be a sharpshooter without being an expert.
I get
those
that.
Guys were experts.
I'm just saying, yeah. like that's where, yeah. like that's the bar now. Like that's the bar.
Well, for me, the
rough
bar,
seas,
yeah,
both up and down, yeah. head explodes.
For me, I mean that too. But for me, also the Canadian sniper that got a guy from 2.5 miles away. Even though he could barely see him in his scope.
Yeah, but that's are you sure you have that right? Because it's Canadian, it's Canada. It could have been
not kilometers.
It could have been
miles.
Kilometers.
It was miles.
And you do the conversion. It ends up he's only like 4 feet away.
You're like $7 for a liter of gas. This yeah. sucks.
That's
Wait,
crazy.
No, that's about right.
Well,
that's
crazy. How long did the, was the whole duration of the children or the child like leaving the parent? To getting to
yeah,
the
we don't know.
Well, hold on. So
we don't know what happened.
I didn't get
with,
to give my. So I say yeah,
the. Where did the sharpshooter come from?
I say the.
Well,
majority.
Because as soon as the child went into the enclosure, immediately the zoo called for emergency response. They came out there with the sharpshooters, with the guys with the darts.
But that's what I'm saying.
Make,
how long did this take?
Like a couple of minutes.
So the zoo did everything. So that yeah. this
so
is going to be my
got
point.
Somebody there.
Yes. The zoo
oh,
did
absolutely.
Everything that they could. I yes. say the majority of the blame goes on the parents. The okay. vast majority of it.
All right.
Because how many people visit that zoo every day? And this is and this kid got through. Like the barricades work for 99.9999998% of the people,
mm-hmm.
right? It was a freak thing, okay?
Freaking Kid MacGyver.
All right, so it's a freak thing. It's a tragedy, yes, but I got to put most of the blame on the parents because it like I think the zoo did everything that they could. They don't want lawsuits.
Right.
They don't want this thing to happen. Could they have done more? Probably, but no matter what you do, you can do more.
See, and that to
right?
me, your opinion matters more because you're. Let's be honest, you're more of the animal rights activist out of anyone in the group. So you believe
probably.
That's probably the right call to kill the gorilla and hopefully not have a 4-year old dead.
I mean, I'm not happy about it. I mean, obviously,
well,
yeah.
would you protest like these people are?
No,
protesting
I'm not
going to
protest. I mean, if it's a difference between a 4-year old kid and like the gorilla, like I mean, you got to put the gorilla down. That's why I say it's a tragedy. But if you want to lay blame, like the majority of it goes with the parent. Like you, like Jimmy was saying earlier, you're in that. We're going out. We're at the zoo. Like you have to be diligent in keeping track of your kids. And I said it earlier. Yes,
I agree.
You know, you turn around and the kid can be gone. But you also need that.
Well, there's
kid
a rumor going around they were taking selfies.
Well, but either way,
lost the kid.
But the thing is, like, but. Your kid needs to be well behaved enough that when you say get your ass back here, the kid gets his ass back there.
How lucky is
yeah,
this kid that it was actually a gorilla?
Kind of
oh no, you absolutely
sorry,
can't.
What again?
Because
no,
when I was when I
was
a kid, when I was a kid, if
things
my dad they shouldn't
bear,
be, they
bear,
absolutely shouldn't be.
Wolverine,
when I was a kid,
like that,
if I got too far away and my dad said get your ass over here, I got my ass over there.
I agree, but you have to admit that times are different with parents and children these days,
and that's it's completely on the parents.
See, that's what I said.
And I was
you have to make your kids mind.
And I was trying to tell the would. I was making eye contact with Jimmy, not in a sexual way, but it was just, hey, what's up, Jimmy? And so anyways.
Well, you winked at him.
I did. I winked at him,
That's a little weird.
That was a little bit more than a wink.
That's a little weird.
But I was saying the kid's lucky because a gorilla actually, because the intelligence is so, like, he was, like, feeling out the situation, as Jimmy said.
Yeah.
Where, like, if it's a polar bear, grizzly bear, or something crazy like a wolverine, that kid's gone before
yeah,
he
yeah.
sharpshoot.
Really, probably the people yelling I would
agitated
say the people
the
yelling probably house a
well,
good deal
did.
Of blame too,
well,
because
yeah,
that's what
true,
agitated
true, yeah.
him.
Yeah.
He looked like he was sitting the kid up and really like, hey, you're in a bad situation.
This stuff
here.
has happened before. Like kids have
yeah.
fallen into like chimp enclosures and gorilla
yeah.
enclosures, and it's happened. The it was a I don't remember how long ago it was. The female gorilla picked up the child
and she like a baby
and like took it like away so
to
that like
it
yeah to protect it right. Like they didn't have to kill it or anything, but those people are yelling. I guarantee you people threw shit at that gorilla. I don't know if it's on the video or if they said it. I guarantee it happened.
Well,
I guarantee
distract it. Go follow the camera.
Yeah,
order.
I guarantee it happened.
Yeah, I'm going to say the only thing that you saw from the video was after the child fell in, the gorilla yanking him through the moat. Then he like sat him up, and then he went to go grab like go somewhere else, and he grabbed the kid and dragged him through the moat again. That's when they switched from okay, we're gonna trank this gorilla to okay, we're gonna have to shoot him.
Hmm.
And the thing is, let's be honest, like he probably would have treated a baby gorilla the same way. They're just hardier than a baby
exactly.
kid.
Exactly.
Right. Than a human. Grab you.
Right. Yeah. Like you, I mean, you can like you pick grab the kid by the leg and drag it around.
Right.
Like, it's exactly. a gorilla kid. Like they
And that's the thing is the gorilla wouldn't have known any difference. He
right.
He was treating it like he would have.
He was just looking, he's like, "Where's all your hair, dude?"
Right. Exactly.
He's like, "You're ugly, but
right.
I'll take you back."
Yeah.
See if mama wants to keep you.
Right.
This is exactly why we don't write response times for zoos. But my idea would be like have a guy distract the gorilla over there while someone swoops in for the kid or something like that. My idea would be too complicated.
Brad's on the phone. He's like, we need 4 bananas stat.
Exactly.
Brad's just throwing
frozen bananas with chocolate. This
throwing
is serious.
Bananas. He's like. What was the gorilla's name? Anybody know?
Hombie
or something.
Hombie. It's like yeah. Hombie. Who wants a banana? Hombie. He's like throwing it at him. The gorilla's like, no, I got
to. I'd have tried to been the hero. We'd probably all got shot.
Yeah, I would say you all would have died.
Exactly. We're gonna go to our first break, but guess who just came in?
Who,
Marcus
Brad?
Motown Bully.
What?
Carter is
Are
here.
Are you kidding me?
We found him this week.
With a belt, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks for texting back, by the way. And we'll see you in a few minutes. Bye.
This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome back to the Undercard. We are joined by Tommy Robinson, bronze medal winner of the National Golden Gloves. And we're also joined
Yay!
By Marcus Motown Bully Carter, who is the national champion at the heavyweight title for the National Golden Gloves from Salt Lake City. So welcome, guys.
How y'all doing?
We're all right.
How y'all doing?
All right. Well, let's first off start off by congratulating you guys because I sit on the Metro Detroit Golden Glove boards and you guys accomplished something that a team hasn't done in 30 years, and that's a second place finish. So congratulations
nice.
On that.
Thank you.
Yay!
You guys have a unique bond together. We knew when we were sending you guys that you guys had a potential to do a lot of damage because of the previous year. Marcus, you were a bronze medal finisher. We had Isaiah. Mm-hmm. Last weekend here talking about it, and Chad, that you guys are a special group of people. So first off, I want to start off with Marcus. Talk a little bit about this team. What makes this team special? You guys have obviously been around each other in the amateurs for a long time. And then we'll move on to Tommy and get his impersonation, or not impersonation, his impression of the
team.
You
do impersonations?
His impression
please,
of the team.
Please tell me you do Sean Connery.
His impressions of the team. So Marcus, what do you think of the team?
Like the last year team, we had Geno Jones, you know, Caleb Chesternut, and we had a couple of guys last year. But I grew up with Geno, Caleb, Tommy, Tony, everybody. But by us being living in Detroit together and we fighting against each other from different gyms, and we have a relationship. So as we come together as a team to go down to another state and fight in the Golden Gloves Nationals. It's like we have a bond, and we all, you know, work with each other and motivate each other to work hard more and fight harder when you're in the ring.
How about you, Tommy? What's your impressions of the team?
Well, this team this year, we had three good champions, Marcus and me. And Isaiah Thomas. We all fought every day and did good. Last year they was all right. And that's about it.
All right.
Wait, I wasn't all right last year. Everybody was chanting my name last year. Motown Bully.
Yeah, let's talk about this, Marcus. So last year you're a third place finisher. You win what's the award I'm looking for? You won the
The Sportsmanship Award.
Sportsmanship Award.
Oh, okay.
You were very upset. They had to come get you from the hotel room
to go
accept your award because you were unhappy with the decision.
I lost against Cam Awesome.
But you were a fan favorite, and we were expecting a lot from you this year. You come into the regional competition, the Metro Detroit Golden Gloves, which was mm-hmm. held at the Kronk Gym.
Yeah.
You take care of business. So exactly. So what's your thoughts going into this? Because you're obviously a favorite now.
Well, I couldn't believe it because it's God with me. And, like, I was just training hard, you know, hoping to be the next Golden Gloves National Champion. But it's all with the skills, skill level.
Well, you look like you had fun at the regional level. I did watch your national fight too, but you stayed in the pocket. You're just you're a hard hitter for an amateur. Let's be honest. You hit people and they hurt. You sat there, and most people don't want to fight you.
No, he ain't want to fight me. Nobody ain't want to fight me.
So that's an interesting predicament, because heavyweight thing covers everything above a certain weight limit, so they got to come through you if they can't make weight. So here you are standing there. You're a third-place finisher the year before.
Right.
Metro Detroit Golden Gloves, we couldn't get you a fight on the Friday. Couldn't get you a fight on Saturday. No. But we did get you a fight on Sunday.
Right.
And like you said, it was a stoppage.
You just barreled through them.
It was just too easy. Like,
stoppage at what point?
Like,
it was a second, right?
Second?
Or no.
It was the first round. Yeah. We was in the corners going to the second. Stopped it.
Oh, so couldn't answer the bell.
He couldn't answer.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
Wow.
All right.
That's mean. Why you got to beat a guy up like that?
I hit him with some hard punches.
Yeah.
And his coach ain't want me to hurt him even more, so I guess he stopped it.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I could tell you guys this, because at an amateur level, you know, because of the headgear and everything like that, it's you see, like, sometimes a good shot. This kid, every time he throws a punch, I mean, it's landing, and you can see the grimace on the face. It's affecting the fighter.
Yeah.
Not only that, you can be on the other side of the gym and hear him hit.
Yeah.
Mm. It's like a thud. You're like a gunshot from, like, across the ring and stuff like that. So he obviously knows it.
I got to go over to Tommy,
and Tommy, you get to make the national team, and you go out there and you represent well, a third place finish. And tell us a little bit about your journey through the regional tournament and to the national tournament.
Well, in the regionals, I didn't get a fight. And then to the nationals, I won every day except for the semifinals. And it was kind of tough, but it really wasn't. The guy that beat me, he won the whole tournament. And I had to make weight every day. Starve myself to win, in which I was really doing is winning.
Because he's eating too much. He's in a row. Every time we come from the fight, Cortez ordering pizza. My meat don't even have to make weight.
Right, yeah.
You know, I can eat it.
Well, yeah, that's just you got it all over him. So Would you ever tease him about it? This is so good. This is probably the best pizza I've ever eaten in my life. They will never make another pizza as good as this.
They forgetting that they not heavyweight.
Yeah.
Right?
So, Tommy, he says that you go back to the room and eat. How did you lose the weight overnight to make it the next day?
I was running.
Big poops.
Oh, man.
Very, very big poops.
Chad had help. Chad burnt them out.
Like, what were you talking? How much over were you every morning?
3 or 4 pounds.
Okay. So you do a little running the next morning and get it done?
Yep.
Hey, bet. Wouldn't it be easier just to abstain the night before than run?
Yeah.
But no, you're like those Oreos look too good.
He's like, yeah, Brad, it damn sure would have been easier.
But the thing is, he got to make weight at 114. Chad had him drop weight to 112.
Oh, no.
That's underweight.
Nice.
Hey, he's just being mean.
Yeah, Chad was being mean. Chad like, no, you got another 10 minutes on here.
I think that should be a bylaw that no one should have to room with a heavyweight. That's just, I mean, that doesn't make sense, right?
Or heavyweight. He ain't have a room with me, you know, by me being the most funnest and most popular. Everything. Everybody coming to my room to party.
Right?
Bringing pizzas and Oreos. Ding dongs.
Pops.
We do have some questions
Tommy's like anything. He's like, no, I'll just have this celery. I'm good.
We have some great questions from some listeners. First, we're going to go to Scotty Buck, who's listening. He wants to know about no headgear going into the Olympics or amateurs anymore. What do you guys think about it? Should you headgear be worn at the amateur level anymore, or do you think that you guys are ready if you continue amateur? I know you guys are thinking pro.
For amateurs,
headgear.
For like me, I prefer no headgear. Like, no headgear. That's how
that's
you
because
you
end the guy's night in 10 seconds, if that's the case.
Yeah, but what I think that, you know, we should wear headgear in like local fights. Nah, in tournaments, I think they should take off the headgear.
Okay. What about you, Tommy? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the same.
Headgear gone.
Now, why is that? Why okay in locals but not tournaments?
The reason I say locals is because, you know, you're not getting ranked in locals.
Okay.
And then tournaments, like, you getting ranked in tournaments, like, And plus, it would be way easier to knock somebody out.
It would be way easier.
Way easier.
Marcus, like, I'm tired of hitting guys so hard. He's like, do you know how hard I got to hit a guy?
Yeah. He's like, the pizza comes much quicker when you hit it.
He's like,
back in the room.
He's like, if that dude hadn't been wearing head guard and knocked him out in 30 seconds, yeah. I'm back in the room. I got double pepperoni. I got crazy bread.
I regret that first day. The first day I fought in the Nationals down there. I got tired in the second round, but he ain't know I was tired. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But the guy was running so much from me.
Yeah,
I mean running so, and then I was saying in my head, I regret I ate them breadsticks.
He's not thinking. They're like, "What's your strategy?" He's like,
"Eat don't eat the breadsticks."
He's like, "Stop at the third breadstick."
Chad was so mad. Chad was like, "That's the worst I ever seen you fight."
Then the coach, next day, it's the breadsticks, coach.
I'm thinking of the scene from Indiana Jones where he just shoots the guy. Yeah, like Marcus exactly. Is like, "I'm so tired. You know what, coach? I'm just gonna knock this fucker out."
But like, me as a business person,
I'm just tired.
I want to know what the breadsticks were from, which company, so you can get an endorsement here.
What was they from?
I don't think they want to give that endorsement.
Little Caesars.
No, they wasn't.
Or
from dang. I think that was Papa John's.
Yeah, Papa John's.
Papa John's. Okay. Eat our breadsticks. Still
Papa,
not
John's
needs,
Papa John's. Shout Papa out to John's Marcus, needs Papa to call John. Marcus.
Yeah,
Papa John's, eat three breadsticks, knock a guy out, eat the rest.
Exactly. Yeah.
instead of squirting water in Mark's mouth, right. Just feeding him breadsticks.
Poor Tommy over here has to hit 112, two pounds under his weight.
Tommy, he just hates every minute of that.
Tommy walks into the room, he smells the pizza, he's like, "God damn it, I gotta get on the truck."
He's like, "Shit, I just gained 3 pounds smelling that shit."
You know what commercial you should put him on?
What's that?
The Hidden Valley commercial.
Oh.
Hidden Valley?
All salads for him.
All salads.
Eat a piece of celery. Yeah.
Don't be dipping that in ranch. That's just empty calories, my man.
Did you guys have any problems with the altitude? We'll start off with Tommy. Salt Lake City, it's what, 4 miles above sea level?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Way up there. You guys get there, it's high up in the mountains. Was there anything about the altitude that bothered you?
Yeah, a little bit. Hard for me to breathe a little bit when I was fighting.
Yeah. So is that something over the weekend you were able to adjust to, or is that something that obviously every fighter, Chad made a good point, every fighter has to deal with the same thing. They're all dealing with the altitude problem, except the people that are from the Rocky Mountain Golden Gloves. But was it something that over the weekend you were able to adjust to?
Yes, I adjust to it.
All right. Now we come to the guy that eats all the time. What's this altitude do to you, buddy?
Like...
He's like, "I got off the plane, I was struggling."
All right.
No, you think that's a joke? I was in Denver where it's only a mile high. Dude, and like walking from my room to the elevator, I was like, dude. And like, I'm not the best in shape, all right? But come on, give me some credit, right? Like, I can walk three rooms.
In Denver, you can ride the elevator and get out of breath.
It's crazy
like, there, dude. You're like, what's wrong with this, dude? You go up like a couple flights, you're like, I'm out of breath.
Yeah, like I'm
elevator.
Dying. So how were you in Salt Lake City, Marcus?
By me being in shape, I'm in shape. At like 300 pounds.
Right.
Like some people don't, like I'm 300 right now. Like.
Really?
Yeah, I'm 300 right now.
Actually, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, I'm 300. Solid. 300
yeah,
pounds.
No, I'm not. Yeah.
Can I feel?
230.
Yeah, you can feel me. Yeah. Yeah.
This is why we need cameras.
Yeah, no kidding. You want some of this, Rochelle? Go ahead.
I really ain't. I really didn't feel any change. Like, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I really didn't even feel it. I thought it was the same air as the Detroit air.
Yeah.
But the time I did feel it is when I was in there in the ring boxing.
Right. Mm.
That's when
it's because they make those breadsticks at 4 miles up. Yeah.
You didn't notice any mountains with like snow on them still and you thought it was the same air?
Yep.
Okay.
There was mountains with snow.
Yeah, there was a lot of mountains with snow.
Yeah.
All right, we got
there
some
sure
other.
Were, but I was busy knocking fuckers out. So.
Well, how long are you guys there before your actual fight start?
The day before.
Yeah.
So like you're less than 24 hours, you're already in the ring.
Yes,
yep. About that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, just go ahead and play that. That's fine.
He's Snapchatting. He's Snapchatting.
Go ahead.
We got another.
You got to take that FaceTime. Go ahead. Yeah, that's fine.
We got another question from Scotty. This is a good question, too. In debate right now is pros wanting to fight in the Olympics. Obviously, you guys are at an amateur level. I know you guys are going pro pretty soon. But what do you guys think about pros fighting in the Olympics after you guys are amateurs? Should it stay amateurs or should you guys allow pros. I heard Manny Pacquiao, he's excited to fight for Philippines, which I think is a bad idea.
In the Olympics?
Yeah.
Just let amateurs do it.
Let amateurs do it?
Let amateurs do it. That do not sound right at all. Like, if Manny Pacquiao, he is already
he wants to fight for the Philippines? Yeah.
That wouldn't make no sense.
It's the whole boxing or the basketball argument where the pro teams go
in
there.
Hockey.
Yeah.
In hockey, unfortunately. Yeah. I firmly believe that I love it in the hockey level, but I think in basketball it really cheapens it. I'd like to see Canada knock off the U.S. and
I don't think professionals should be in the Olympics at all.
No, I don't think
the Olympics should be in Rio, but that's a discussion we had on the last hour.
I think the Olympics should be in Detroit.
That'd be awesome. Windsor, Detroit?
Wow.
Where?
No.
Yeah, well, I know.
We tried something similar to that with the Super Bowl, and it was an epic fail.
I thought it was good.
Every
single event would turn into the decathlon or whatever, where you have to stop and shoot and then run, and then run.
Yeah. We have so many arenas now, and one little, like, one block area that they would have no place
it's
to
stupid,
have it,
dude. Yeah. And we're gonna get into that.
Or unless they used all those arenas for the events.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no.
All right,
no.
I got a question for you guys. I asked Isaiah Jones last week, and I said, "Who's the best fighter on the team, pound for pound?" Marcus, who's the best fighter on the team, pound for pound?
You are allowed to say yourself.
Marcus the Motown Bully.
All right. Tommy.
Give it to Marcus.
You're going
to
give it to Marcus?
Oh, okay. All right.
Look at the Marcus love, dude. You're like a teddy bear. Everyone loves you, dude.
Everybody loves me. Everybody.
And now, I'm sorry. Now, let me ask you this.
There's no humility there at all.
Right. So we know that...
Hey, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way.
Right. We know that Chad was your coach for the Golden Gloves, but who's your actual coach? Who do you train with?
Claude Strickland.
Who?
Claude Strickland.
Okay, out of what gym?
He closed the gym. It was Motown Boxing.
Okay.
But I'm at Hands On right now.
Okay.
So he come to Hands On to train me. But I might leave Hands On and go with them because, you know, I can't be far from them.
Okay.
Like, they leave, I leave.
Okay.
Gotcha. And so... Tommy, where are you training with? Who's your coach?
My dad training at Hands On, but we going back to Motown.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're opening the gym back up? Or
they got, like, it's a Motown Fitness, and it was a Motown boxing gym.
Okay.
So we training at the Motown Fitness.
Okay. Gotcha. All right.
Now, the question we're going to leave to you, and we're going to go break, and when we come back off break, we're going to do what's on tap, and then we're going to ask you guys the big question. You hit national champion at the Golden Glove level. Are you thinking about turning pro? I see your Facebook posts. I know. You're getting contacted by agent every second.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about Tommy, about his amateur career. So we're going to go our last break of this hour, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to do What's on Tap with Jimmy, and we're going to ask the crucial question that everybody's been asking me on Facebook right now is, what are your guys' plans for the pros?
Okay.
This is a previously recorded episode.
You said stuff.
Welcome back to the undercard episode 191. You don't like Liz, Marcus?
I like Sarah.
Aww.
Liz looked nice too.
Nope.
Liz
she
looks
was
good.
Wearing the cool outfit on
I'm
Sunday. She was wearing the gold shorts with the Metro Detroit Golden Gloves.
Dude, Sunday he actually fought, so he wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
But the other 2 days when no one wanted to fight Marcus, he was looking at Sarah.
He wasn't worrying about his weight. He was just in there, got to get the
job. Oh, I know
done.
He wasn't, because that's how me and Ors would keep him interested. We'd offer him pieces of pizza. Like, hey, could you watch security for us because you're not fighting? There
he
might be a slice of pizza involved.
They were being cheap on the hot dogs.
I wasn't being cheap.
Say I could get a hot dog with no onions and relish.
Yeah, there was nothing really to put on.
But Liz is nice, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm over
I mean,
it
we,
now. I'm over it.
That's our thing. We have ring card girls in
our
studio.
She's a beautiful girl.
She is very beautiful. But you like Sarah, and we'll let Sarah know.
Let
Sarah know. You got big things ahead of you. Because this is the one thing I'll say to Tommy, too. Tommy, are you thinking about going pro?
No, next year.
So you're going
to
do one more turn. There we go. And Marcus placed third last year and then came back in national championship. I think you're going to have a good chance to be national champion at your weight. But let's talk about this really quick, because the transition to pro. Marcus, I know you've already been posting online. You don't stay off.
No.
Yeah, you're never offline. You've been posting. Some agents have been contacting you. You obviously are heavyweight, which typically in boxing is the more exciting division in the past. Lately now, because of the Golovkins, the Manny Pacquiao's and stuff, people like the middleweights and all that stuff. But heavyweight is typically the division that everyone's interested in. You're thinking about going pro?
Yes.
All right. What's your plan,
though? Like tomorrow or?
No, okay. Like I turn 19 in November 30th. Happy birthday. I was thinking about turning pro after I turned 19. It depends how, you know, my coach feel, you know, about me turning pro. But I feel I'm ready. Like, by the time November comes, I've been to drop 30 pounds to be at, like, 260 and going to my pro debut at 260-something.
Now, so, what is it that makes you feel that you're ready?
First of all, I won the Golden Gloves Nationals.
Okay.
I won the Silver Gloves Nationals when I was a junior. Came in second in the Junior Olympics Nationals.
Okay.
And I just feel like, you know, I've been boxing for 10 years and it's about time I turn pro now.
So you got you got the experience that Chad's always saying that you got to have before you go.
Yes, I got the experience.
And let me talk a little bit about how special it is to win a national or be national champion at the national Golden Glove level. Anthony Barnes, who sits in on our show, great fighter, great amateur, never was national Golden Glove champion. Tony Harrison, great fighter, love him, great amateur, wasn't a national Golden Glove champion. These guys are our first national Golden Glove champions since Eric De Leon, who won it 3 years in a row. And Eric De Leon is a great pro. To win this is a huge deal.
Sure.
A lot of people don't win it. And you guys are part of, like, Detroit, Metro Detroit history. Think about that. 100 years after you pass, you're going to be in that list.
Your fist or foot could be down by the river.
Or your hot dog without relish and onions.
Pizza, pizza.
That's what it would be.
Yeah, it'll be Papa John's monument with breadsticks.
It'll be a fist with a breadstick in it.
I like to think it's his face with a breadstick in the mouth.
All the Coney Islands in the Detroit metro area are going to
have
a hot dog
named
in the Marcus, which is with onions and relish.
The bully dog.
The bully dog. There you go.
And then they could call it the Tommy Twin if you want celery on it.
Tommy likes that. He's like, yeah, I agree with that. So think about that. Detroit, such a great history, but it's still rare to have a national Golden Glove champion. And here you are, national Golden Glove champion.
That's crazy.
Has it sunk in yet? I mean, it's still a month. I mean, you got the belt around you like it has. Yeah. It's upside down.
It is upside down. But so he can read it, so he can see it.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
He just needs to know he's champion.
Who cares if anybody else can read
it? How much does it weigh?
He can read it.
How much does it weigh? Like 5 pounds?
More than Liz?
1/64th of him.
Okay.
How much does it weigh? What?
At least, like, I think this is like 10 pounds.
Okay.
Okay.
Because this is real heavy to me.
All right, Tommy. You get a chance next year to become national champion. You got to keep the legacy going on for the Metro Detroit Golden Gloves. A little bit of pressure there I'm putting on you, but I think you can do it. And you guys got so I think I know who's going pro. I just kind of do. I just kind of look it over and I do. But then there's a good group of guys coming back. What can we do to keep the amateur ranks going here in Metro Detroit Golden Gloves and having a good gym turnout? I mean, you guys are part of it right now. What can we do to encourage kids to be a part of this?
We can encourage kids to be part of it by staying in the gym and staying amateur. I don't think some people on the team are ready to turn pro yet. I think they should stay another year.
Not yet.
So as Marcus should stay another year.
Oh, he's saying Marcus.
Oh, I should stay another year.
You should stay another year, Marcus.
They want me to stay another year with them so I could win another one with them.
Well, it's a good point, Marcus, so I'm going to bring it up really quick. 19, Mike Tyson was a very young champion and stuff like that, but there is a good argument for you to come back and have another year of amateurs. Obviously, you would be the defending champion. Obviously, you would be the favorite to win the heavyweight championship again at the national Golden Glove level. You're still very, very young.
Yeah.
Could you stay? I mean, are you 100% going pro?
To me, I would stay another year to represent Detroit Golden Gloves again. But
you gonna shake on it?
I shake on it.
So you're gonna be in our tournament next year?
Yeah, I'm gonna be in the tournament next year. It's just the reason I was thinking about turning pro because of the money.
I know.
But, you know, if I won two Golden Gloves.
But they're offering Toyotas right now. Next year, they'd be offering Cadillacs.
Yeah, they'd be offering Cadillacs. They win it again, they'd be offering.
I feel like Toyota Camry. Yeah, I don't want that. Porsche. Cadillac Escalade. That's what I'm talking about.
Porsche?
If you could go and then defend your championship, do you realize the opportunities that would be there? And, you know, the only reason I'm saying that, if you're 21-22, because I see how hard you're hitting, and this is just my opinion, and it doesn't matter, but I'm just saying, you're so young that I could see you coming back another year.
Yeah, I could make it.
Especially because the Detroit scene of pros, let's be honest, it's good. You got some good promoters out there, mm-hmm. but it maybe isn't consistent enough to, like, keep you active enough.
Right.
So another year of amateurs could do you well. So maybe Tommy brings up a good point. You guys seem pretty close.
I mean, when I won it today and we came back to the hotel, they were like, Marcus, you should just stay another year with us, man. Go. So I said, yeah, I was going to stay with them. Because I want to see them win it, and I want to win it again.
You seem to be a good leader for them anyway. I mean, yeah.
You're captain of the team with your Papa John's breadstick. See, Tommy, you did good today. We might have our national champion going to defend. What about Isaiah Jones? He's not here to defend himself, but he was talking about going pros. Do you think he should come back one more year?
Isaiah?
Yeah.
Isaiah, he's strong to be 165. Yeah. I never sparred him, though, but, I think he should go pro.
Yeah.
I think he should, because he much older than us, and he won the Golden Gloves at the right time, because I think he's, like, 23. Yeah. So he should go pro.
All right. So I got to ask Tommy, fighters out there that are pro, who do you like to, I guess, emulate, or who do you respect out there? Any styles that you take from out there?
Mayweather.
Like Mayweather? There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
He boxed just like Mayweather with a left
hand. Smart fighter. What do you do that Mayweather does?
I'm real fast, just like him, and I move good like him.
Do you do a lead right like him?
I'm southpaw. I do lead left.
Oh, okay, lead left.
Yeah.
And run a lot.
Oh, wow.
You know how Mayweather defense
shots
is?
Shots fired. Yeah.
He do that.
Yeah.
But Marcus, I don't even have to ask you this question. You're George Foreman, but let's ask you, who do you maybe kind of look like in the boxer?
To me? Let me see.
George Foreman.
See, I can fight you and I can box you. I can box
George
real
Foreman
good.
In his later years. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a bit little George for me. Exactly. I like a little bit Holyfield too. And
okay,
really, I really like Muhammad Ali.
Oh well, there's something wrong with any of those decisions.
Yeah, definitely people to emulate.
Now the small fighter I look at is Mayweather too.
Is Mayweather? Okay. I mean, I told Sugar Hill this a million times. If my son was going to boxing, I would want him to be Floyd Mayweather. I mean, here's a guy that's at his end of his career, is able to walk away from the sport, smart, wasn't hit a lot, made
not
a lot of money drunk. In the sport.
Not
who cares what
drunk.
People – right. Not punch drunk. Exactly. Tommy, I got to ask you this. What is, I guess, Marcus's best quality in the ring? We already know power.
Yeah. He can move fast. He moves fast, too, to be a heavyweight.
I don't know about that. Is it really?
Oh, you shouldn't. You ain't ever seen
it. I know.
I can move.
I'm waiting for you to defend it.
I can move.
All right.
And I'm so fast. I'm fast. I'm faster than guys that's smaller than me. That's crazy.
No, that's good. Marcus, same thing. Give Tommy a compliment. What's his best attribute he brings to the ring?
His defense. Like his counter punching. Like he got some good counter punches.
Which is very good at the pro level, but extremely great at the amateur level.
Yes.
So do you think Tommy has a chance of being the national champion at the Gold Gloves level next year?
Oh, yes. Sorry, I had a call.
Oh, that's all right.
But
like, I'm on podcastdetroit.com right now, so you need to ignore that.
But he took one move from me. One move. That everybody always do it since they see me be successful with it. That's that. Jab, steps to the side, right hand.
Okay. Is that true? You steal a move from him?
No, he stole it from me.
I'll show you a video of me doing it right now on Instagram. I'll show you a video of me doing it right now on Instagram.
Tommy, I like to believe you, but I know that Marcus is flirting with girls during other shows, so I don't know if he's actually watching you. Because I see him mingling with everybody. He knows everybody in the crowd. We put Marcus in, this is a true story, we put Marcus in the security job role.
Right.
For a couple of days because, like, he didn't have any fights, and so we were short some security guards. And so Marcus, he's a people person. So, like, I'll be honest. I think every half person was getting by you because they knew you. They're like, hey, Marcus. They would do this handshake thing where they'd do it, and then they'd roll into VIP. And we'd have somebody, like, roll right into VIP. And you can't be mad at Marcus because he knows everybody, and we've given him a tough position, right?
Right.
But I look, and all of a sudden the VIP area is full.
I don't like to be mean.
I don't. It's not,
there's more
so
people
weird.
In the VIP
only
than like elsewhere.
Like, they would do like this handshake roll, and then they'd be off them, and they'd roll right into VIP. And Marcus would be like, "I'm watching my post. What are you talking about?"
I mean, everybody in the Nationals. At least I got every team in the Nationals. I mean, every team. Would you drop your pocket? I just got you.
Dang, dude.
I was like, he's not gonna. He did. He totally looked.
Like, I get everybody just loved me. Everybody.
So how in tune are you guys with the pro scene right now? Obviously, you guys are huge boxing fans, right?
Yeah, I'm a huge boxing fan.
How about you, Tommy?
Huge? Yes.
All right, so let's talk about some issues. Holy cow, Mayweather's probably going to fight McGregor. It's probably going to happen. We talked to Ronnie Austin Jr., who was actually eating Olive Garden with somebody in the know. He says this fight is actually
happening. We didn't talk to him. We talked to Tef.
Teflon Ron.
Right.
And Teflon Ron says this fight's happening. Freddie Roach has seen Conor McGregor since then. He says that Conor McGregor is probably 3 years away from fighting Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
Can McGregor fight? Like,
not enough
boxer?
No, he's an MMA fighter.
Mayweather trying to make another payday.
Yeah, this is supposed to be like $100 million
fight. Canelo again, either Canelo or Adrian. If he fight Adrian Broner, it's gonna be like a $200 million fight.
Really?
Because Adrian Broner talks so much junk.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone wants to see Broner and him in a ring because they're the same style. Styles make fight.
You know what? Triple G to fight Mayweather.
Yeah, that would be great, but I don't think Mayweather touches him.
No.
So let's talk really quickly here. Who would win Canelo Triple G, Marcus?
Ooh. Triple G strong. Canelo strong. Canelo got more skill than Triple
Canelo.
G. He got more skill. Maybe Canelo. Mm-hmm. But Triple G,
if Triple G catch you with one,
you gonna go down.
Right.
So that's
you know that feeling in the ring. You catch somebody, they're done.
Yeah.
Their night's over.
So I really think Canelo, because he got more skill level. He know how to throw his shots. Like, he plays the shots so well. Like, a whole combination. He will land a whole combination of you, not miss one punch.
Mm-hmm. Right. Growing up as a kid, you talked about Muhammad Ali being an influence and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. if you could fight any heavyweight out there right now, Tyson Fury, Klitschko, any of those, who would you like to fight? Wilder?
Deontay Wilder? I want to feel that right hand.
You want to feel that right hand?
Yeah. Everybody say his right hand hard. I used to like want to fight Klitschko too, because I heard he had a nice right hand too.
You like hugging and cuddling?
That's how you know. That's how you know you're talking to somebody.
That's what he's gonna do. Yeah.
That's how you know you're talking to somebody who loves boxing, because he wants to know how it feels to get fucking punched by someone.
I want to feel that right hand.
Yeah. Right? Like, I want to feel it. I was like, I don't ever want to feel that in my life. And he's like, yeah, I want to get punched by him.
Deontay Wilder, I like him. People hate to get punched by him?
I love Deontay Wilder. Yeah, I love his story.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, me too. I don't want to get punched by him.
No, I mean, so you want to fight Wilder because, you know, you want to feel his right hand, Klitschko, because you like hugging and, you know, all that kind of stuff like that. But, who out there in the heavyweight division do you think would make the most exciting fight for you to fight with? Yeah.
Nobody.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So there's no heavyweight pro right now that could give you an exciting fight.
No. If I picture me at 22 years old pro, I would be much stronger, much more skilled, and be in shape much more.
Not if you keep eating breadsticks.
Pop and be taller.
Instead of breadsticks, I'll probably be eating veggie sticks.
Yeah.
Tommy, I know this about boxing. You will not be pro at 112.
Nope.
I will tell you. Exactly. And not only that, you're probably mid-career will be...
Get any fights.
Yeah, so who do you want out there?
Ain't nobody even in my weight class at 118 like the dead. I really know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the problem. And typically, that's a tough weight to maintain. Uh-huh. How old are you?
18.
18, dude. I tell you what, I could eat two pizzas and still weigh in the next day.
I'm 18 and he 18. It's a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
What realistically, when your pro career comes around, what do you think you'll fight at?
126.
Okay. Anybody out there right now at 126 you like?
No.
So you're going to stay amateur one more year.
One more year.
Then probably national champion. I have faith in you, and I believe you're going to be defending.
Yes.
And then you guys are going to bring back the first place trophy this time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Marcus, I'm going to hold you to that, by the way. We have a meeting on the Golden Gloves on Thursday, and okay. I'm going to be like, book Marcus. Write him in right now, dude. He's filing with his passport right now. He's coming back. You in, right?
Yeah.
All right.
They cheated me on the Golden Boy trophy, though.
Did they really? Yeah, what happened?
The guy that he fought won it.
Yeah, and I got I mean,
everybody looked. Everybody came to see me.
I agree.
Me. I think, I'm going to get the Golden Boy. He got the Golden Boy because he was from there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I really beat him.
And then, I haven't watched that fight. I have watched Marcus's championship fight. A little bit of controversy. Chad said it was a very close fight. Tell us a little bit about that decision.
I thought I really wanted it. I didn't even think it was close at all. I dropped him like twice and they didn't even call that. He fell into the rope. They didn't call none of that. And,
no standing eight counts.
No standing eight, nothing.
That's tough, dude.
That was so wrong. That was so wrong. I thought he won too. But I guess.
And they stole this fight 4-1.
You got to be a lot of aggressive down there.
So taking that experience into next year, I mean, is there anything that you could have looked at the fight you would have done different? I mean, obviously you think you dropped him a couple times. You got him against the rope a couple times. Is there anything you could have done different?
I could have stayed in the pocket more.
A little bit?
Yeah.
You think you ran a little bit?
Yeah, I was moving too much a little bit.
I just kept coming forward. That's all I did the whole 4 days. Kept coming forward.
That's what people with power do, though. You're like, you're going to feel this before the fight's over. You're going to know if you can stand, right?
Yeah.
How many stoppages did you have in the national tournament?
Two.
The
semifinals and the finals.
That's unheard of, man.
The semifinals and the finals. I'm thinking when you
body shots or what? Were they body
head
shots?
Head shots.
Were they head shots?
I mean, I was coming to the body, hitting them in the head. Boom. Like, you would hear it. Like, you would hear my punch. Like, the guitar guy fought in the semifinals, he was 6'7". 6'7", he's at least like 220.
But he dropped you, Marcus.
You said he dropped me.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about in the semifinals. And the guy, he dropped me in the thing. I tripped. Chad said, don't go in there, do nothing fast. See, the second day I fought, I went in there, you know, was boxing him, beating him up, just beating him up. I did a jab, tried to step over, throw a hook, trip myself at the same time, and he just gonna hit me. And they thinking that...
Counting as a knockdown.
Yeah, the referee thought it was a knockdown, but everybody else, like, you know, I tripped. So I ain't sweat that, because I just got up and started beating them up even more.
Now, there's a lot of talking in pro boxing. I sit ringside at a lot of pro events, and there's a lot of yapping going on. How about at amateur level? Is there any talking with your opponent at all?
Any talk? No.
No?
I think you can't talk to your opponent in the ring.
Okay. How about you, Tommy?
You're disqualified.
Yeah, you
could do that. Dude, at a pro level, everybody's
talking. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, in a pro level.
But at amateur level, you can't talk any.
Nope, I get disqualified.
I mean, I'd be one to say, like, because I got a good jab. You know, my jab always land on you. So I'd be like, you like that jab? You like to eat that jab?
You like that Papa John's coming down the middle? You like that breast?
You like that pepperoni?
Exactly. Freaking phenomenal, man.
This my fight.
Oh, no, I watch your fight, dude. We'll post it. Yeah.
You see the right hands.
Oh, you did an absolutely great job. Tommy did a great job, too. We're very proud of you guys. And this Metro Detroit Golden Gloves team, if I get a chance to write about it in Fight News, I hope to. I know Rick Pratt is writing about it on Ringside Report. You guys deserve to get the credit. And think about this. As great as our boxing history is in Detroit, this is something that you guys have accomplished as a team that hasn't happened in 33 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. So congratulations on that. Be very proud about that. I'm very excited that Tommy's coming back. I'm very excited that you're coming back. Mm-hmm. Marcus, I think you've got the skills to keep going. But you're 19, dude, and I'm very excited you're coming back. So but don't listen to me, dude. I just do a podcast.
Where are the Nationals next year? Is it in New Orleans?
Louisiana.
Yeah, Louisiana.
Okay. Louisiana.
Yeah. Right. So you don't got to deal with the altitude. You just got
to
deal with the...
Now, see, that's an event I would like to go to.
I won't be eating pizza down there. I'll be eating chicken.
You want some gumbo or some jambalaya or something? Get you a po' boy. You like the andouille or the chicken or what? Shrimp?
Chicken, shrimp.
I like the andouille
rice.
Po' boy.
I like rice.
Rice and beans, red beans and rice. It's my favorite thing.
All right.
You know how to eat.
Look at me, dude.
wait, hold on. Do you think you could out-eat Marv?
Oh, well, that's unfair. Like,
Well, I started eating portions now, so my stomach just shrunk a little bit. But I think I can out-eat that.
Oh,
man.
I guarantee you he can out-eat me.
Should we have, like, an eat-off?
No, because I had surgery. My stomach is the size of my... My ball sack is bigger than my stomach right now, dude. Like that.
Do not show us.
I mean, I can prove it if you want.
No.
Look, you can do the bat wing.
a waiting joke. Marcus, give a shout out to anyone you want to say. Trainers, anybody that's been influential, family that's been influential in your career.
Shout out to the Lord, God. Shout out to my dad, Mark Brown. My coach, Carl Strickland. You know, my team, Geno Jones, Tommy Robinson, Tony Robinson. A shout out to my sponsor, P. Robinson. I just shout out to my grandma and my siblings and all the people who helped me come up and succeed.
And a shout out to John Schnatter, who started Papa John's.
Shout out to him too.
All right, really quickly, give a shout out, Tommy. To
shout out to Team Gino, shout out to Team Robinson, and shout out to our sponsor P, and shout out to my family.
That's absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for you guys coming in. We're going to go to our last break. We're going to come back.
No, we're not.
Oh, you didn't read it yet?
No.
Oh, shoot.
No,
we're going to read that. Then we're going to call Ed Thoroughbred Williams, and then we're going to have Bob and Dave join us too. So we're going to go to What's on Tap really quick with Jimmy, and we're going to do a photo, and we'll be right back.
All right. So once again, this is What's on Tap, sponsored by Falling Down Beer Company. All right, so starting again with boxing, June 2nd in Moscow, Ishmael Silica versus Maxim Vlasov, 10 rounds for the cruiserweights. June 3rd in Hollywood, Florida, Rancis Bartholomew versus Mickey Bay, 12 rounds for Bartholomew's IBF lightweight title. Los Angeles, Estrada TV, Ronnie Rios versus Efrain Esquivias, 10 rounds for the featherweights. New York, Richard Avril versus Jerry Belmontes. 10 rounds for the junior welterweights. Philadelphia, Deshaun Johnson versus DeCarlo Perez. 8 rounds for the super middleweights. Sydney, Australia, Billy Dibb versus Perrin Pecht Tor Bumas. 10 rounds for the junior lightweights.
What was that name again?
Perrin Pecht Tor Bumas.
Oh, okay. Let's check it.
Yep. June 4th at Montreal PBC on ESPN, Artur Beterbiev versus Esquiel Madirina, 12 rounds for the light heavyweights. Carson, California, HBO, Francesco Vargas versus Orlando Salido, 12 rounds for Vargas's WBC junior lightweight title. Liverpool, England, Liam Smith versus Predrag Radosevic, 12 rounds for Smith's WBO junior middleweight title. Kassel, Germany, Caro Murat versus Esteban Taberi, 10 rounds for the light heavyweights. Cancun, Mexico, Andreas Gutierrez versus Christian Majerez, 12 rounds for the featherweights. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Luis Arias versus Jorge Silva, 10 rounds for the middleweights. In Uruguay, Daoud Jordan versus Christian Rafael Correa, 10 rounds for the lightweights. Bristol, Pennsylvania, Derek Webster versus to be announced, six rounds to super middleweights. And
to be announced is one of my favorite fighters.
I know he is. He's
he dominates, dude. He sure does. He's everywhere.
He shows up quite a bit. And then at Toms River, New Jersey, Jeff Lentz versus Ibrahim Shahbaz, six rounds for the welterweights. Moving on to moving on to MMA, June 3rd, ROC 55, Ring of Combat 55 in New Jersey. PLMMA 3F4 in Poland, RFA 38, Moise versus Chavez in the Costa Mesa, California, June 3rd, Shamrock FC Explosion in St. Louis, Missouri, June 4th, UFC 199, Rockhold versus Bisping in Inglewood, California, June 4th, FMD full. Okay, you got to hear this one. Okay, you're gonna love this
what
one.
What do you got?
June 4th, FMD, Full Metal Dojo 10, Sweep All the Legs.
What?
That is the name of the promotion.
That is the best promotion name I have. Read that again.
Sweep the Legs.
Full Metal Dojo 10, Sweep All the Legs.
Where is that? That's in California?
No, it is in Insanity Club, Bangkok, Thailand.
Ah, damn it. I would totally go to that.
One night in Bangkok makes sense.
I know. June 4th, M1 Challenge 67, Battle in the Land of Fire in Abidjan. Yep. June 4th, VFC Fight Night at Harrah's 4 in Harrah's Council Bluffs Casino and Hotel in Iowa.
They need to combine the Sweep All the Legs and the Battle in Fire and just make it one just epic
sweep
promotion.
Sweep All the Fire Legs.
What was the first one?
Full Metal Dojo 10, Sweep All the Legs, and Battle in the Land of Fire.
Sweep All the Legs, just do it all together.
Yeah. Fight Night 49 EFN in Slovakia and Deep Jewels 12 in Tokyo, Japan.
What?
That one?
That has to be lost in translation.
Deep Jewels 12.
No. I can't even, dude. No.
In Tokyo, Japan. And once again, that's What's on Tap, sponsored by Falling Down Beer Company. That last one I only kept in there for you.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Sweep Deep All Jewels. The Legs. I did Deep that Jewels. One specifically for
Love
you.
It. And, thanks, Jimmy.
Yep. And Deep Jewels 12.
We're going to stay here, and actually we're going to try to call Ed Thoroughbred Williams here really quick and see if we can get a quick interview with him. He is actually fighting in Las Vegas. He's fighting on HBO pay-per-view undercard July 23rd, so he's agreed to do a quick interview with us. So we're going to try to call Ed Williams really quick, the UBF welterweight champion. So we're going to try to do that before our last break.
Hello?
Hey, Ed, it's Brad. You're live on the air with the undercard. How are you today?
Hey, Brad, how's it going? I'm awesome.
Good. We are joined by Ed Thoroughbred Williams, the UBF welterweight champion, going down Saturday, July 23rd, 2016. He's going to be on the HBO pay-per-view undercard match. Congratulations on that, Ed. How'd that come about?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I guess hard work and perseverance. I mean, they called me with the opportunity. You know, I was just waiting and looking for my big opportunity to fight on the huge show. I mean, I think every boxer has a dream to fight in Vegas at the MGM. So now it's time to make dreams come true and step up to the next level.
We're joined by Ed Williams. You can go to thoroughbredboxing.com to follow his career. And you've been around the Michigan scene for a little bit and stuff like that. Tell us a little bit about your style. Introduce people to you and why they should be an Ed Williams fan.
Well, my style, I'm more of a boxer type. You know, I have the crunk style. If you guys follow boxing, especially Detroit boxing, you know, crunk has a unique style that any other city and state does not. I'm a boxer. I sort of have a style like a Tommy. I believe I have a great jab, and I use my jab to set up everything. And you know that's the most part about me. I believe I'm exciting. I'm a crowd drawer, and definitely have aspirations and ambitions to go to the top. So, you know, Detroit is my home and I love it. So, you know, I appreciate the support, and you're going to see and hear more and more about me.
Now, you fighting on July 23rd. This is a big dream, as you said, for people to fight at MGM Grand. This is a big opportunity. Tell us a little bit about different preparations that you're going through with this fight. Obviously, bigger scale, bigger reward. Anything different you're doing in your camp?
Nothing's different. Just taking everything to the next notch. Not leaving any rock unturned. You know, resting right. We're not going to overtrain. So, you know, like right now, this week I'm training, but we sort of declined a step back because I actually just got out of camp. I was a head sparring partner with Mayweather Promotions fighter Mickey Bay. He's actually fighting this Saturday in Miami for the IBF world title. So it was a tough training camp, and I'm in shape now. I mean, we were going 15 rounds. And I sort of declined, pulled back on my workout as much this week. And June 6th, we're kicking training camp for myself up to 100. So
now people know you as Thoroughbred. Where did that nickname come from? Thoroughbredboxing.com. A lot of supporters. You were at a Salida show. A lot of people wearing the Thoroughbred shirts that are available on your website. Who gave you the nickname, and how valuable is that to have such a nickname that people are identify about?
It's very valuable, and I sort of just walked into it. You know, I'm sort of from the old school boxing era. My uncle was one of Detroit Crunk's first middleweight, Dwayne Thomas, who beat John McGavin the Beast in '85. So, you know, I've been around the community of boxing for years, even before I was boxing, and that's why I was always taught. You know, you don't give yourself a name. That's sort of a bad stigma. You sort of earn your name and let it come to you. So I was like, okay, really wasn't expecting it. Sort of one of my friends in high school, when I graduated high school, you have the high school memory book and all your friends sign and say something. And one of my friends was like, you know, great, 4 years with you, awesome guy. You know, you're a true purebred person. You're a thoroughbred. I'm like, oh, man, that's kind of cool. That's different. Okay. And then one day I was fighting amateur for Kronk, and my trainer was Sugar Hill. And just out of the blue, and this was like maybe 2-3 months difference in coincidence, Hill was like, just messing with me, like, Ed the Thoroughbred. I'm like, what made you call me that? And then he was saying, because I was in shape, I was ripped. He's like, man, look at you. You don't have an ounce of fat. Man, look at you, you're a Thoroughbred. And I'm like, I like it. That's my name. And it sort of just stuck with me ever since.
Now, that being said, if I was nicknamed something, I'd probably embrace it a little bit. Your name, Thoroughbred, do you pay attention to the Kentucky Derby, any of these horse races that involve Thoroughbred racing?
A little. A little. Once I've embraced the name, I sort of read up, you know, what is a Thoroughbred and sort of the horses. And me moving down to the south to Houston, Texas, you know, they embrace the South and all their rich history and tradition. So breeding, horse breeding and racing is definitely one of them. So I'm not an avid fan of horse racing, but I definitely looked into it and gained a little knowledge on it.
Now, all my friends unfortunately moved away to California. They all live in L.A. and stuff like this. But this is what they typically say to me. So they all live in California, and I'll be like, hey, you know what? You guys have forest fires, and they're like, well, we'll take our forest fires over having like negative 10 degree winters and stuff like that. You guys are under a flood exactly. warning in Texas. Explain to us the difference of living in Texas as in living in Michigan, because I think we're pretty blessed in Michigan. We have the occasional tornado and stuff like that, but we are actually kind of in a bubble away from elements. What's going on in Texas right now with all these floods?
It's really like the glass half full, the glass half empty theory. I mean, granted, yeah, you don't have any. In Michigan, we didn't have the type of elements that we have down south in Houston, but in Texas. But Houston, Texas floods. I mean, it's flat land, it's near the Gulf. Hard rain is going to be submerged underwater. But it's not often. it typically happens at least about twice, three times a year. So one may say, well, screw that's not that often, but the floods are dangerous. But other than that, you're having a regular temperature of 95, well, typically 85 degrees year-round, and then in the summer it spikes into the hundreds. So like, I was amazed when I found out during December, pools doesn't close. Like, people are outside swimming, and, and as an athlete, it's easier to get up and go running in 85, 90 degrees weather in December compared to zero below.
Yeah, and sure, and running and sidestepping rattlesnakes. And
armadillos
and
kicking.
Armadillos running around, tumbleweeds. I'm just saying, you don't have a danger of getting bitten by a rattlesnake up here.
Well, and you only have two or three times, you know, a year that you have to worry about getting washed away by a flood.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just two or three times a year.
You know.
Yeah. Well,
he's like, yeah, right.
I'm 100% with you. But, I mean, other than getting your fingers and toes frostbitten and bit and having them amputated and, you know, just being cold when it's, what was it, May? You guys were, I mean, you had to wear a winter coat in May.
Oh, yeah, we still. Like
I have
a hoodie in the car just in case.
I will admit that I mowed my lawn earlier in the month with a coat on. I will admit that.
Hey, we admit it.
That's no fun.
But I mowed my lawn with a coat on with no danger of being bitten by a rattlesnake.
So talk a little
True.
Bit about.
I give you that.
Yeah.
This.
Wait, no,
what? I'm saying this is a natural zoo. I mean, like you said, when I thought it was a joke when I was jogging, and you'll see signs just as you would see anywhere else. It just looks like a traffic or sign about the neighborhood and saying beware of rattlesnakes or no children alone because of wild pigs or hogs.
Wild pigs?
Oh, okay.
Hogs.
Wild
hogs just roaming around.
Yeah, you be safe out there. I don't want to see the obituary where Ed Thoroughbred Williams was taken out by a wild hog. Everybody,
that's not gonna happen.
A tin count of the bell as Ed Thoroughbred Williams was taken out by a wild hog. I don't want to see that.
They're interviewing the hog afterwards. He's like, "Well, he fought to the end, but
I could tell he was a good boxer. You're I could right. see where he got the nickname Thoroughbred, but I took him out.
But you know, he don't have tusks, and I got tusks. So,
well, we missed you back here in Michigan, Ed. And tell everybody once again, thoroughbredboxing.com. Where can they find you on social media if they want to follow Ed Williams, Ed Thoroughbred Williams?
They can follow me on Instagram at Thoroughbred Boxing, one word, no spaces. That's THOROUGHBREDBOXING.
That's right. Buy your shirts before July 23rd, where he's fighting at MGM Grand Garden Arena.
Can find
Hello?
Me
I think we're losing.
Also a problem in Texas, no cell phone service down there.
Thoroughbred Williams.
All right. Thank you so much, Ed, for joining us. We greatly appreciate it, and we'll stay in touch with you after July 23rd. Best of luck.
Bye. I need the Motor City to come out, and I love and respect everyone. Thanks for
the Life in Mars is tough.
Thank
you. All right, we're behind you, Ed.
All right, thank you. Take care, Ed. We were obviously losing connection at
that
there.
But
that was Ed Thoroughbred Williams telling us about, so these floods have been crazy. I've actually been paying attention to that. And that's exactly why I wouldn't live in Texas, the flood season, because I hate water in basements and stuff like that.
I wouldn't but live anyways, in Texas because you have to live in Texas.
Everything's big in Texas, by the way.
Well,
everything's big.
Look at what's come out of Texas.
Everything's big.
Look at what's
Texas.
Come out of Texas. As of
but that's Ed Williams, one of the nicest guys in boxing. We're going to our last break, and then we're going to bring in Bob and Dave.
This is a previously recorded episode.
This show have a little bit of life, so I welcome Bob and Dave. Thank you very much.
We lit up the torch and said, follow us, our children.
Yeah.
Leave the Russell.
When I'd go to Dave and I'd be like, it's so bad, Dave's like, follow.
That's right. We know. We know.
Be patient, my son.
It's so much nicer bringing people to this building than it ever was walking up those four flights of stairs at the Russell.
Don't mind the smell.
And smelling all the weed and like.
Well, you've noticed. I hated starting like everything with an apology. Like, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to walk up four flights.
We used to warn people at 3rd Street. We know it's going to look. We're not taking you to a torture.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We swear to God.
Well, the first time Brad brought, I was like, no, I'm not going there.
I am not going in that building.
You know, it's kind of like,
it's like, what have I done to you?
In retrospect, it was rather charming.
Was it?
Once you got up there, once you got up there and like kind of got a little bit settled in, and you made fun of like, don't sit on the couch. Like, ah! You know,
no pop lights.
I think by that point, I think you had just gotten enough of a contact high not to give a shit.
Wait, well, you'll notice the progression. So yeah. Russell, mm-hmm. four flights of stairs,
right?
Last studio, one flight of stairs.
But a long flight.
This studio, no stairs.
It was no a beautiful stairs. Thing. That's one of the things I told Liz on the way in. I'm like, you just walk right in and it's there.
Yeah.
There.
Well, at the Russell, yeah. was like the bathrooms too. It was like straight out of like some weird like 1920s like Catholic yep. high school.
There was always a microwave
and a toothbrush.
I never understood why.
There was a guy in there doing spreadsheets one time, like just set up shop. And we're like, it's a toilet.
That little area, like right there.
Yeah, yeah. At the table in the bathroom. We're like, what are you doing? Like,
and yours was so much nicer than ours. The girls' bathroom was horrible.
The girls' bathroom had, like, no lights
in it. No lights. Yeah.
Well, I know you had to go in the boys' bathroom to use a mirror because you guys didn't have a mirror.
Yeah, I was always sending girls in there.
God forbid you had to take a shit in that building because it would be, like, the top five worst places to have a shit would be Raw Radio X's.
Probably. Oh, I just went wherever because it didn't make a difference.
We appreciate it.
Just open up a room.
First off, there's heat and air conditioning in the summer. There was no heat in the winter at the old studio.
Right.
There was
no
air conditioning in the summer.
They tried. Like,
no, Marv just sat in front of it.
Yeah, goddamn right.
Well, then that thing was like a jet engine, and you couldn't hear anyone talk.
Right.
Oh yeah, the recordings already came out like crap because you had the air conditioning. Yeah, good times.
Awesome. But here we are in another brand new place.
Right.
Loving
and
it.
I wanted to bring these guys on because you guys are celebrating this Friday your third year on.
About doing our show.
Yeah, exactly. You guys have been around for a while, 7 years, I believe, doing the IT and the D pink slip parties, correct?
Yeah, the meetups, pink slip parties, yep.
But it's your third year doing podcasting. Tell us a little bit about this journey. I mean, 3 years seems like a long time. We're almost our bachelor degrees, all of us, actually.
I still don't understand any of it. I don't.
Well, we went into this never listening to a podcast before, not one. So we didn't follow any rules.
That's great, though.
And to this day...
We keep telling, get told.
We get yelled at that you're not following podcast protocol. And I'm like, A, I don't want to even know what that is. And B, I don't give a shit. The beautiful thing of it's like the Wild West. You make your own path.
Mm-hmm.
And we struck oil, unbeknownst to us, and we're doing it completely ass backwards from everyone else.
And you guys are top five tech?
Number one tech.
Number one tech in podcast.
On SoundCloud this week. This week, yeah.
That's
again.
Great. Think about that.
This week on Mondays.
Right.
From 9 to 11.
Right.
That's unbelievable.
On lunar eclipses.
We're the number one floor tech studios. Show on Podcast Detroit on Mondays between 9 and 11.
We outdraw like USA Today and a bunch of other tech shows. But
you guys outdrew President Obama 1 week. I told you about that. He was on some podcast like that.
Marin, that WTF podcast. No, they got millions.
No. You outdrew him 1 week when like it was on something. I looked at the numbers. I was like, holy cow, you outdrew.
Well, Obama does his weekly radio address, which
It was on something, and I was like, oh my god, like just the magnitude of what you guys are doing is unbelievable.
Well, we don't get like everyone went. The thing we did different is everyone went to iTunes first.
Mm-hmm.
But like you can't. The metrics are so. Metrics are worse than Nielsen TV ratings.
Yeah, you have to get reviews and like all kinds of shit.
No, dude, just like from a publisher standpoint,
yeah,
it's a pain in the ass to get metrics out of it.
Okay,
so like because again, we didn't know what the hell we were doing. We're like, all right, well, there's iTunes, which is a pain in the ass, or there's SoundCloud, which is nice and easy and gives you a little share button and you can embed that on web pages and stuff. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
And then, oh, wait, if we do that, then it also takes care of iTunes. Sweet.
Yeah.
Then we're good.
But SoundCloud goes on plays. Whereas iTunes goes on downloads.
Right.
But the thing with downloads is, you know, once you hit subscribe and it downloads to your phone, are you ever hitting play? And you don't know.
Right.
Right. So that was the whole point where everyone was kind of getting pissy with us saying, well, and then advertisers too are the same way. They're like, we only judge on downloads. Well, how do you know they hit play?
Yeah. I got,
so we
I have
this
like,
big argument. You know?
I have like 20 podcasts on my phone right now that I've not listened to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Downloaded them.
Yeah, Bob got mad at me because I kind of snapped at a potential advertiser that was like, we don't care about downloads. If that's your stat, we don't care.
Yeah.
So having meetings with these guys are
so
relaxed.
You can go your own way.
Right. I love having meetings with these guys. I've had much more meetings with Dave than Bob, but it's just because Bob's busy and stuff like that. But they're so cool. Like they could have a big head about it, but they're willing to help other podcasts say this is the way we've done it.
How many shows are on the network now? 50 something, isn't
it? It's going to be 60.
54 went live
60
last Thursday.
Wow.
And we've got about 6 or 7 more coming out in the next week.
Unbelievable.
Nice. Wow. That's awesome. Very, very cool. That's why you needed a three studios now, right?
Yeah.
Well, then we don't have to play that
really settling.
We don't have to play the shush game in Ferndale anymore because of the open door.
Oh, right. Yeah.
There's no door between the studio and the green room.
Really quiet. There's somebody going on right now.
Right.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about XICW. We cover it when they're in season and stuff. Bob's the official voice of XICW. Dave also is a big part of XICW. What's going on with XICW right now? You guys are definitely the premier organization in Michigan. But besides that, it seems like you guys are growing even a little bit further.
XI's blowing up right now. We introduced Best in Detroit shows about a little bit a year and a half ago. And where we took over the Imperial House, which is, if you haven't been there, it's a big, huge Albanian wedding hall that's not used on Saturdays because there's never any weddings. It's always on Sundays. But it gave the guys a chance to get out of the Ritz and to kind of showcase and make it look like give it a Ring of Honor feel. Right?
It's a great
feel. And to go off the top rope without giving themselves concussions.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, this year was kind of a monumental year. They actually launched Proving Ground, which is kind of like NXT. Which is given, House of Truth pumps a lot of talent through, when there's no place to put these guys because the roster's stacked. So now the whole show, Proving Ground. But then they bring in, Rhino and Alex Shelley to kind of beat the hell out of the newbies. And some of them are going to be future stars. And that's what they have to do. They have to keep pumping new talent in.
So is that, open mic night for wrestlers? Is that what it is?
No, these are guys that have been through the Truth Martini school.
Okay.
And they've been wrestling for two to three or four years.
Okay, all right, cool. You said Proving Ground is I think I'll go wrestle tonight.
No. Yeah, that's not how it works.
No, I would hope not.
What was happening, with XI is, even with the regular roster shows and then especially with the Best in Detroit shows, a lot of these kids that were coming out of, House of Truth and some of the other places, there's no roster spots for them.
Yeah.
They were starting to, they were working with some of the other promotions, but they were always seeing what was going on with XICW.
Right.
And so, DBA said, all right, I think it was Huck, AT Huck that said, all right, let's give this, Proving Grounds thing a shot. There are some months where they're running 3 shows a month. There's the Best in Detroit shows that are on Saturdays. There's the what used to be the normal Rit shows are also at Imperial House now on Sundays. And then there's the Proving Ground shows that are back at the Ritz. In fact, there's one Sunday, isn't there?
Yeah, June 5th, the show of the Sunday is going to be.
Oh, no, it's at the Imperial House. It's at the Imperial House.
But, here's the thing. You got rookies coming in. You have Jay Maynard, which is Chris Sabin's cousin. Right,
okay.
From the Motor City Machine Guns.
Mm-hmm.
You got guys coming out of True School. There's a couple phenoms coming out. And it's tough to get a spot.
Yeah.
Especially when you got these guys are rookies. It's like, oh, crap. It's kind of like with WWE. Unless you're third generation now, it's going to be tough to get that spot. But
you're a legacy, man. You're in.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like it's these Harvard guys are, or something.
But
you guys are the Harvard of...
Right. But it's different when you grow up. It's in your blood. That's all you've known since you've been 3 years old.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get some more. They had Zara Schreiber wrestle last month, who was Seth Rollins' girlfriend from a little bit of controversy going on with that one.
Mm.
But they're bringing in talent.
We missed her.
They're bringing in. They're stacking talent. God. There's stuff going. There's guys that they're bringing in. This year is going to be loaded from Bart Gunn Billy Gunn. To Matt Cross is coming to the Attack at the Yak, Sabu, Rhino, the regular guys.
Cool.
But, there's some, big guys coming in from Lucha Underground, from Ring of Honor. It's fun. It's a blast. I was doing play-by-play commentary sitting next to Colt Cabana, and I'm like, how freaking cool is
that
this?
That is awesome.
Right? Until he found out we do better podcast numbers than him. Then he got pissy with me.
He was mad at us and didn't want to talk anymore.
Is that a conversation that happens in the bathroom, or where does that come about, the podcast?
No, numbers? I knew he was I knew he did the Art of Wrestling podcast, and I talked to him in the locker room. I said, hey,
by the way,
we do podcasts too, and he's like, well, I go, we're actually signed to the same ad agency. He's like, oh, cool. You know, and we started talking. He's like, what are you guys getting numbers-wise? I told him, and then he went real quiet.
He's like,
and
that's locker room talk. He's like, yeah, I see my podcast numbers are bigger than yours.
No, he just I have a heart. And he's like, where's the bell? But he's like, oh, because you guys are IT, and you guys get, you know, people listen to IT. Nobody listens to us.
I know your logo. I know you guys.
Yeah, that's what it is. I always make an excuse. Well, it's cold in here.
Want to buy Bob and Dave a beer, where can they do this on Friday?
At the bar at the Imperial House.
All right.
Or that's Friday.
Third. Yeah, third.
Oh, Friday. That's at Stray Cat on 18 in Garfield.
It's your third anniversary party.
It is the folks that used to own Robusto's in Grosse Pointe.
Mm.
It's a cigar bar. It's like an old throwback. It's a phenomenal place in an awful location. That's the only way I know how to
talk
like this.
I was going to say, should I practice my gangster talk?
Yeah,
talk
like this. Yeah, going to run you out.
Get you out back. And Jimmy said,
it's in a strip mall next to like a Dollar Tree and a, you know,
a CVS. That's where you can pick up the congratulations card on the third year.
Yeah.
Dollar store.
But the place is phenomenal. They bring in really cool bands. Like I said, it's a bad location, but wow, is it a great place.
But it's the bee's knees.
All right. Well, we wanted to bring you in, guys, really quick. We got to move. K-Hub's coming, corner on K-Hub. Really quickly, Bob and Dave, congratulations on third year. It's IT in the D. It happens on Monday nights, 9 to 11 on PodcastDetroit.com. And once again, I cannot say thank you enough for you guys leading the way and having us over here.
No. Thank you.
No, thank you. No, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, thank us.
Fine.
No, thank you.
Yeah, go thank yourself.
Exactly.
I don't even know where we would be if it wasn't for these guys.
I thank myself three or four times a day.
We would have been with Raw Radio X until it crashed and burned.
We would have.
Well, if we didn't. If
there
we
was
didn't
some jumping off point. I don't know where it was, but it was like I'd mingle with them. I'd be like, oh, boy, it's bad.
Are you ready yet?
Yeah. It was like every Tuesday I'd be like, gotta stop. Gotta stop. All right. Thank you so much, guys. This was episode 191. We want to thank all our guests. We want to thank Marcus, Motown Bully Carter. We want to thank Bob and Dave from IT and the D.
Word.
We want to thank Tommy Robinson, who also won. Ed Thoroughbred Williams, K-Hub. Corner with K-Hub's coming up. Congratulations, IT and the D. 3 years. Huge monument. And we are off. See you next Tuesday.
This is a previously recorded episode.